All you need is one chance. Exide Energy Racing's Tamara Molinaro turned a one-off last-minute appearance in Saudi Arabia into an unexpected full season racing at Extreme E, and she's this week's guest on Off Track. Hello, my name's Michael Laminato, and welcome to Off Track, the official podcast of Extreme E. Tamara Molinaro is as determined a racer as you'll ever meet. She was born into a motorsport family and grew up with a passion for rallying and got in her first rally car on ice at just 11 years old. From then on, there was no stopping her. European Rally Championship, WRC, Rallycross, Italian Gravel Championship, she's done it all and has the trophies to prove it. And this year, she added an Extreme E podium to that collection, an unexpected prize in a season she wasn't even supposed to be competing in. At only 25 years old, her rise has been rapid, and I was really interested to hear her talk about dealing at such a young age with the pressure of having sponsors, of racing with other people's money, and most of all, her own expectations of herself to make the most of every opportunity. There's no denying she's done that, and yes, we talk not only about that Sardinia podium, but also about the tattoo. The tattoo she shares with Timo Scheider after their sensational podium at her home race in Sardinia is the chemical formula for adrenaline. But it wasn't their first idea, and I think you'll be interested to hear what some of the other options were. So let's get into it. This is my chat with Exide Energy Racing's Tamara Molinaro. It's a great pleasure to welcome back to Extreme E Off Track, Tamara Molinaro from the Exide Energy Racing team. Tamara, how are you going?
Hello, thank you for having me. All good, thanks. You?
Yeah, I'm doing perfectly well here, looking forward to the next round of Extreme E. So long between races, you know, it really whets the appetite, really makes you hungry for it. A lot's changed since we've spoken to you last time as well at the end of last season. You've got, well, just about a full season of racing under your belt, of course, just ahead of the Energy X-Prix. We're going to talk a little bit about how this season's been going in just a moment, but I really want to know about your backstory, your beginnings of racing. Where does your love for motorsport come from? And do you remember a time when motorsport wasn't going to be part of your life?
Well, no. I really can't remember. I never had life without motorsport, you know. I grew up basically in my parents' workshop. They own a rally team. So I grew up around cars, around tires, around fuel. So something definitely went wrong there. I completely fell in love straight away. There was never a time where I was like, oh, you know, I really don't like this. I don't enjoy going to rallies with my parents. And so I never had life without motorsport. And to be honest, I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. For sure, I still remember the day that I actually drove a car for the first time. It was literally like, I don't know, like what you read in fairy tales when the princess falls in love with the prince. And like, I just had a feeling that it's impossible to describe. And I just love all of this.
So your family was involved in rallying. Was it always going to be driving for you then? Was there ever an interest in I don't know, the mechanical side, maybe even the management side?
Actually, yes. At the beginning, I never thought. I come from a very normal family, so I never thought I would have the opportunities of actually, you know, driving and starting competing for budget reasons. So my idea was actually to become an engineer in the World Rally Championship. That was my goal. But then, yeah, like I said before, the minute I drove a car, I was like, wait, this is more fun than, you know, studying and working. And so, yeah, my plans definitely changed that day.
So, and we're going to jump around here a little bit because I suspect some of the answers to these questions might not all be in a logical answer, but you clearly remember the first time you got in a car and from then that was going to be it. But when was the first time you realized you might be good at driving? Did you even realize that? Was there a moment?
That's a good question, actually. I'd say just about when I started doing the European Championship and I had some good stage times, you get to the end of the stage. Probably there was one time, now that I think about it, I was in Rally Barum in the European Championship. Can't remember 100%, but I think that that was it. And I did the qualifying stage, which was basically this stage in the European Championship, which is like a shakedown that you do ahead of the rally. And I remember I did a very good stage time. And when I got to the end and I saw the board with the time, I was like, you know, and I was so happy. I started punching the steering wheel from joy, and I was actually bleeding. So yeah, I'm not kind of normal, but anyway. Yeah, probably that was the time where I was like, okay, that's not too bad.
It certainly make it memorable. Other than the injured hand, maybe, what changes after that? You know, the moment when you've been working really hard, obviously, to become a racing driver, a rally driver, and then you realize actually that you're on the right path. Does anything change mentally after that moment?
Well, you see, especially in rally, you know, you have maybe 10, 13 stages in one rally. So they don't go all to plan. I mean, sometimes they do, but it's very rare. So, you know, there's never a time that you're like, okay, this is going great, you know. Motorsport is just like a roller coaster. It just goes up and down all the time. So it's not always easy to say, okay, everything is perfect. So
let's go back a little bit now, just a little bit to find out when exactly it is that you started racing, because you've had a pretty close relationship with the WRC regular Gianluigi Galli. He's a regular podium getter, a stage winner. How did that relationship start? Because it sounds like he was pretty key to the whole thing.
Yeah, so basically it's all his fault. I like to think it that way. Anyway, he was a friend of my parents because he started working with my father before my father opened his own workshop. They met there, and then obviously Gigi's career progressed. Then I was born, and me and my parents were always going to his hometown for winter holidays. And then one day, out of nowhere, I was just like watching him driving in an ice track in Livigno, which is in the north of Italy on the Alps. And he was like, oh, you know, you seem really interested in this. Do you want to have a go? And I was like, I'm 11. And, you know, I'm already short now that I'm 25. So you can imagine at 11, I was even very much shorter than average. So I was like, well, I'd love to, but I don't think I can reach the pedals. So we went inside the little house that was in the ice track, and we got some pillows. And then, yeah, I got in the car. He told me what to do, and I did one lap of this little short track. And I was like, okay, this is cool. And then, from there, every winter we would, obviously at 11, it's not easy to find places where you are actually allowed to drive in safety as well. Every winter we would just like go there and have fun. Really, back then was just enjoying it, you know, was just literally having a car and being able to do whatever you want. And then he actually become just maybe to think that I was not too bad at it. So we actually start to play a little bit, you know, with my feeling with the car. Maybe sometimes I couldn't get out of the car. I would have to stay sitting in, and he would maybe change tires. He would put maybe, I don't know, studded tires in the front, and maybe in the back it would be just like normal tarmac tires. And me, without knowing, I had to do the first corner trying to, you know, to feel what the difference was. And then after the lap, going and tell him what I felt was different, and, you know, just trying to get a better feeling. And then our friendship just, you know, continued over the years. And then we actually did two rallies together. We did one. We did Monza Rally Show together, which was incredibly fun. He's an incredible driver. So, yeah, I have some really good memories with him.
So obviously your family were involved in rally, but it's not unusual. We hear a lot about, of course, the parents who have their children become drivers and whatever, but it's not unusual either for some parents to think, well, maybe they don't actually want their kids to be involved. Was that ever an issue for you?
No, never. Thank God. My parents are both really huge fans of speed, and even my mother rides a motorbike, and my dad does motocross, and you know, so we are the kind of a mad family. So they never tried to stop me. Of course, my mom is always a little bit more concerned, but I mean, I guess that's kind of normal anyway. So.
Yeah, a good thing, I suppose. So we know how it started then. We know that first taste of speed. You figured out that you really like driving, and before long you figure out, I guess, or you've been told at a minimum, that you might actually be pretty good at it. Then what happens? How do you decide that you're going to become a rally driver? How do you put those first steps into practice? Because rally is a pretty massive world with heaps of different disciplines in it.
Yeah, definitely. I think rallying is one of the most difficult motorsport disciplines. It's so difficult, and you need so much experience to actually start to become quick. You know, in circuit racing is a bit different. In rallying, there are so many different things that can happen during a stage that you really need to be on top of your game to be competitive. Like I said, I've always been so attracted to that sport. I've always looked up and I was like, oh my God, look at what these guys are doing. You know, so I've been always like a super fan girl anyway. and then obviously when I got like my chance to drive, I was like, okay, you know, there are different things. There's rallycross, there's rally, there's, you know, off-road racing. But for me, was always rallying. For me, I never had a doubt in my mind that that's what I wanted to do. So yeah, I mean, the next step then, I was 12, I think, and I was in this ice truck with my parents. And I remember there was a woman that came to me and she was like, oh, can I maybe go for a spin with you in the car? Never saw this woman ever before in my life. And I was like, yeah, of course, you know, for me, it was literally like going on a roller coaster and just enjoy it, you know? So it was like, whoever wants to go with me, whatever, I go and drive. There's no bother at all. So, yeah, she comes in the car, we do a lap together, we laugh and we enjoy. And then when I go out of the car, she gives me a business card. And I was like, wait, I'm 12. Like, I don't need business cards. I don't even have a cell phone, you know? and then when I check out the business card, was actually a woman that was working in Red Bull. And I was like, okay, wait, maybe this is good. You know, I had no idea that afternoon would lead to something what actually happened to me. But obviously I gave the business card to my parents and they kept in contact. And then when I actually turned 16, they contacted me again and they wanted to do an admission test to see if I developed, if I was good, if I still liked it, you know, if I was still motivated. And we did this test and they actually built a junior program around me. And that was the start of everything. Because like I said before, without help and without support, that would have never happened.
So what are the kind of things you learn in a junior program as a young rally driver? Because you've got a feel for it. I guess a feel is really important, right? There must be something innate on some level that you've got, but then how do you build on that?
Like I said before, it's all experience. In rally, of course, like you need to have it in you, you know, you have to be passionate, you have to love it, you know, like everything in life anyway, you know, if you want to do something in a proper way, you have to love what you do. So yeah, it was all about, you know, testing and driving, and then also on the physical side, on the mental side. And so let's say it was like a 360 degrees program.
Now, 2017, you enter the European Rally Championship. I guess this is probably the first really big championship you've entered at this point. I mean, you're still pretty young anyway, so you can't have entered two really big things before that to begin with. But immediately seventh in the junior class, you win the ladies' trophy. Just tell us about that step into that championship and how did that go compared to how you expected it to go?
So I have always super high expectations for myself, which is good, but not so good at the same time, because at the same time, you put so much pressure on your shoulders when probably you shouldn't, you know, because it was my proper full year in rallying, you know, so I shouldn't have had to expect so much from myself because obviously the competition level was super high. The other guys, you know, they could have had, I think the junior was up to 27 years old and I was just 19, you know, so trying to be competitive with somebody that has maybe nearly 10 years more experience than you, it's quite tough. So yeah, I think it was probably a bit too early, you know, for my expectations of being competitive was probably a step that has been made too early. Obviously I didn't make that decision. But anyway, look, it was a good year in the end and I learned a lot. So
where do those expectations come from? Is it that the fact that you're from a motorsport family, or is it that you are going through the processes so young?
I think a bit of the fact that I've been through so many things at little age, you know, that like I had a lot of people investing a lot of money in my career. And I wasn't even 18, you know, I didn't even have a driving license. So that, of course, put a lot of pressure on a young girl's shoulders, which is not easy to manage, if I have to be completely honest. And then it's just who I am. I was just born super competitive. And, you know, when you get to the end of the stage and you don't have a good stage time, let's say that the conversation in the car was very little with my co-driver, because I wanted to just be on my own and think, and, you know. So, yeah, let's say I'm... Yeah, I'm very competitive. Let's put it that way.
It is really interesting, though, because that idea, you mentioned there, you know, there are a lot of people have to invest in any young driver, really, for them to be successful, unless you're fortunate enough, of course, to be born into an incredibly wealthy family. But even then, I guess you might have the pressure of parents or whatever. It is really something quite significant for young people to go through. I mean, did you see that on people you were racing against as well, that idea that everyone was carrying this extra pressure, not just to be quick on the track, but they're kind of racing for other people when they're out there as well?
Yeah, you see, in rally, it's very difficult to find a chance like the one I had. So, you know, I always wanted to try to act like a tough girl, and, you know, like everything was fine. But I have to say, I really struggled back then. This is not something that I've said very often, but yeah, it was very, very hard times mentally, to be honest. But yeah, like I said, I was very lucky.
I guess the pressure to be tough, and this is something I guess we'll talk a little bit about in terms of Extreme E as well, but obviously there are only so many women who are progressing through the rally stages. Is that part of that? Is that just trying to make sure you try to fit in, or is there something more to that?
I just think that there are not enough people that actually support girls for a long period of time, you know, because like I said before, it's not like you just like flick your fingers, you do a season in the European Championship and, you know, you become world champion. It takes so much time and so many different things to actually make it, that has to be something longer than just the 1-2 years, you know. And it's very hard to find people that actually want to, you know, to put this kind of commitment into trying to succeed.
Well, I'm really interested then, because in 2017, right, wasn't it, you entered your first WRC rally. That is sort of, I mean, that's a massive tick, first of all, the fact that you make it into the service park for WRC. But on the other hand, you are also carrying these enormous expectations of yourself. What was that like to walk into the service park for the first time? Was it more, I guess, happiness that you made it there, or was that suddenly another level of expectation on yourself?
I'd say a bit of both. But yeah, of course, it was incredibly high pressure, especially because, so I was working with Opel Motorsport. They were part of my junior program. And obviously I entered Rally Germany, so it was their home rally. So of course they wanted to have a good result. So it was a lot of pressure for sure. But you know, at the same time, when you actually go and you do admin check, you know, you have like your driver pass in your hands, and it's like, oh my god, like this is a world championship driver pass. You know, for all my life I've been holding like mechanic or guest or whatever from my parents' team when we were going and competing with customers in the world championship. So at that moment I was like, oh, you know, this is real, you know, this is getting real. So it I can't describe the memories that this sport gave me until now.
Do you still have that pass?
Yeah. Of course great. I have a wall of memories, and that's definitely part of it.
Yeah, it's undoubtedly a good memory. You've tried a lot of other things other than just the WRC as well. Of course, from there you went to Rallycross, where you raced, I guess we can talk about this later on as well, against the Hansen brothers in particular. You've done the Gravel Championship in Italy as well, where you were twice the ladies champion there too. Is there any surface that you found that you're not good at this point?
Well, let's say that I have less experience on tarmac. I have more experience on gravel and ice. I've never had the opportunity of actually develop my skills on tarmac. And you know, like before rallying, I never did any racing. I never karted, or I never did anything at all. So because I started so young with driving a car, you know, I actually never had the opportunity of doing anything else. So let's say tarmac, yeah.
And let's compare rally to rallycross now, because weirdly enough, that ends up being, I guess, pretty important when we start talking about Extreme A. Now you've got cars alongside you. Now you've got this different level of competition. What's that transition like?
Weird. I mean, I remember the first time that I actually did my first rallycross. You know, I had the first taste of rallycross. I was like, I clearly remember standing on the start line. And I was like, oh my God, like this light is going to be green and these cars are going to be with me. Like there's one corner and five cars. What's going to happen? You know, like I said, I had absolutely no racing experience. So I was like, okay. But then literally the minute I started, I was like, oh wait, this is super cool. So of course it was tough, you know. It's not easy at all when you have no idea how to race other people, you know, to actually try to make it work. Because, you know, at the end, I tried to be too aggressive and that obviously ended up in penalties. And then, you know, sometimes you're just a bit too cautious and that obviously doesn't pay off. So it's hard to find the balance, you know, in very short time, because I think I only did 5 events in Rallycross. But that was the full championship. But it's not easy to, you know, to be competitive straight away. But I have to say, I really had a good year. I enjoyed it a lot. And I think at the end of the season, I was actually quite good.
And what, I mean, the competition aspect is one of it in Rallycross. But the idea that you're doing circuits fundamentally, you know, rallying, I guess, is a little bit seat of your pants. Like, obviously, you've got preparations, naturally enough. But, you know, you've got to sort of take it as it comes. Does that change the mental approach, I guess, this idea that you're doing a couple of laps, there's a different element to it? Was that an adjustment?
For sure. Like, and Rallycross as well is so intense comparing to rally. You know, everything is just like compressed in, you know, you have, I don't know, 5 laps of craziness. And like I said, I had weekends, for example, that like one heat was incredible. Like I would win my heat. And then on the second one, maybe I got in contact with someone and you know, your race is finished. And then it's just like all going up and down with incredible emotions. You know, I remember, like, for example, when I won my first heat, I was, oh my God, I was over the moon. There is actually a video of it and it's actually quite fun. Quite fun to watch. Like I'm Italian, so you know I have a lot of fire in my belly, and I love sport. I love competing, so of course I'm always very, very emotional from good side or bad side. So, but yeah, let's say that it was quite a bit a big step from rallying to rallycross. Even adapting your driving style and everything, you have to learn how to protect the inside of corners. You know, in rally we don't have to do that. So like sometimes I would get to a corner and like a car would just literally just pass by. It was like, oh shit, I forgot. You know, I have to cover. So yeah. Are just things that you learn with time.
How was the steering wheel after that win? Was it all right?
I didn't punch it that time. I didn't. Yeah.
That's progress.
Surprisingly, I didn't. Yeah, I know.
Before we get on to Extreme E, I do want to talk, of course, up to this point, and we've touched on a little bit already, there are only so many women who are making these steps, and you've made these steps pretty quickly as well. You know, you've impressed yourself upon so many different categories, as we've talked about, different formats. How's that been part of the journey? You've talked about it already a little bit, the idea that it's not so easy to get funding. I mean, that's sort of the case for everyone, but in particular when there are only so many women doing it. How much has that been something that you've had to, I guess, address or in making sure that you're able to take the steps you have been?
Well, to be honest, in my career, it always worked like, okay, I have an opportunity, I take it. You know, whatever the hell was thrown at me, anything, like I would accept anything, you know. Like I said, I adore driving. That's what keeps me alive, basically, you know. So I don't care if it's on a track, if it's on rally, if it's off-road, whatever it is, I just, you know, if I get the opportunity of someone saying, okay, there is this chance for you, I go. I don't care what it is. So
that's a good attitude to take, I guess. Is it changing over time? I mean, you've still only, it's 25 years old, right? You've only seen so much. Are you seeing change in that format?
No, I love it like day one.
It's always good to know. Let's talk about Extreme A though. Let's talk about this journey. It's only been a relatively short journey. In fact, we're not even at the end of the second year yet. When did it first pop up on your radar, Extreme A? I mean, it's a pretty wacky championship when you think about it. Seems kind of normal now, actually. I'm trying to remember even back when I heard about it the first time and I was like, that's crazy. But when did you hear about it the first time?
I think I was actually at home and my partner sent me a screenshot of an article on Facebook or something like that, anyway, a link or something. And I remember I opened the link and I was like, oh, wow, this is interesting. Yeah. But I remember I was reading the article and I still didn't quite understand exactly what it was. So I was like, okay, I will have to find out more about it. But I remember the minute I understood exactly what it was, I was like, I just want to be part of it, you know, from the first minute I saw what it was. I was like, yeah.
Now, of course, that first year, really, you were involved as the championship driver, and we'll talk a little bit about your job there and also relationship with Timo Scheider in a minute. But how did the approach go? Did you approach Extreme E first? Did they get in contact with you? How was it that you actually got involved?
No, they actually got in contact with me. So before Greenland, I got a call from James Taylor, it progresses from there. Obviously, I was super happy. Like when I got the call and I hung up the phone, I was like, yes, you know, because I was quite sad I didn't make it into the driver's field for the first season. I got in contact before season one by some teams, and you know, I was hoping that something might have worked out for me, but it didn't. So of course, then when I got the opportunity of being the championship driver, I was super happy.
So we've talked about that competitive streak, that really extreme competitiveness streak. What's it like then? You know, you got to do all the preparations of being a racing driver. You know, you're going to the gym, you're doing the workouts, you're rocking up at the tracks as well, some of them quite far away, and you're not racing. How was that?
Heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. You know, like I said, I wanted it so bad. So I remember actually one time, you can ask Timo if you want. We were in, was it Greenland? Yeah, I think it was my first event. So we did everything, and you know, we were just like watching the race in race control, like usual, because that's what we were doing, you know. So we were watching just everything live on the screen, and then we actually went to the podium. And I remember I was looking up to the drivers on the podium, and I was like, shit, I want to be there, and I started crying. Wow. So, and Timo was next to me. Yeah. And Timo was next to me, and he was like, oh, don't worry, your time will come. And then it actually came for both of us. So yeah, it's heartbreaking. But of course, you know, it was a very good opportunity, and I actually learned a lot. I learned a lot.
Because there was an additional element to being the championship driver, wasn't there? I think a lot of people probably assumed it was just being a reserve driver, for want of a better word, just hanging around. But there was the circuit design stuff and testing it out and trying to evaluate it. That is a lot of pressure, particularly for the first year of this championship. And let's not forget that really there was none of the planning the year before. Because of COVID, everything just sort of hit the ground running really quickly. Tell us a little bit about what that role entailed.
Well, yeah, like you said, it's a lot of things, you know. You just have to try to think. I was always more on the driver side, you know. When me and Timo were looking at the track, you know, the Sunday before the event, you know, if there was something that would have made it a bit more fun for the drivers, for sure that would be me pushing towards that direction. But of course, like, you have to think about, there are so many different things that you have to keep into consideration when you actually do a track design, because there are maybe some places that you actually can't go to because you know, maybe because there's something special about the nature, let's say, you know, there are maybe some bushes, or there's like something special that you can't even go near. Then there is the TV side. Of course, they want, I remember like in Greenland, for example, we actually had to go, let's say, quite far in the track because they wanted the shot with the cars and the glacier in the back. So, you know, there are so many things that you have to keep in your mind when you actually do something like that. So many people you have to work and coordinate with. So yeah, there's a lot of work behind it. And in Extreme E, there is actually so many people working for a race weekend. It's insane. You know, when you come a week earlier and you see how everything develops in the paddock and everything, it's really incredible. And these people really deserve a really big thank you. Even before the events, in fairness, like, there's a lot of organization and preparation. So yeah, it's a lot of work.
Especially when you consider some of the places we're going to. This is not just down the road. I mean, Greenland, or even the places we're going to this year. Of course, Chile was an incredible location. You mentioned you got that chance. Wait until this year, but you got that chance. Ended up being the first round, in fact, the Desert X Prix. Of course, unfortunately, it does mean that for a reserve driver to get their shot, the driver has to sit out. So there is that side of it. But then all of a sudden, you're in that seat. It's a brand new team, of course, because you didn't have a team before that. New season, new location. We've already talked about, you put quite a lot of pressure on yourself. That must have been quite extreme when you got that phone call.
Yeah, but I have to say, I don't know why that weekend everything just went, you know, probably because I wanted it so much that I actually didn't think about anything else apart from, you know, just trying to show what I can do. I was actually feeling very comfortable with the car. You know, it's very, difficult. You know, I never met any of the guys of the teams before. So I remember was Tuesday, Wednesday. Can't remember. I land in their tent. I'm like, hi, I'm new. I'm your new driver. You know. And normally when we do the track test, we never play with anything with the car. You know, we literally just drive and we do no changes to settings or this sort of things like you would do in a race. So, you know, I never learned properly how to do this with the Odyssey. So in a very short period of time, you have to learn so many things and also the rules, for example. As a championship driver, I had no idea what the rules were, you know, how the switch worked. So in so small space of time, you have to learn and think about so many things. So let's say it's not easy, but it was an incredible weekend.
Yeah, and yet you ended up being so competitive, despite having to learn the rules over the course of the weekend. I mean, that's what a result that ended up being.
Yeah, no, it was very special. And also in... What was it? It was the semi-final. We ended up in a very difficult semi-final, in fairness. We were up against the RXR and X44. So we knew that that was going to be tough. But anyway, we didn't give up. And I actually had a very good start. I managed to pass one of the drivers. And then I remember I was like, so close to Johan Kristoffersson. And I was like, oh, this is so cool, you know. And I just like trying to do something, but yeah, then I wanted to try to overtake on the inside, but I ended up into some bumps and I had to back off. So I actually lost quite some time. And then actually Ollie had a very good lap as well, but he hit the flag, so we didn't make it to the final. That would have been really the cherry on the cake. Does that make sense in English?
Yeah,
because
yeah,
in Italian we have this expression. Yeah. But yeah, we had a great weekend anyway.
Yeah, it was in fact the team's best weekend up to that point. Of course, you topped it a little bit later on, which we will get to. Did you get an opportunity to let it sink in, though? You mentioned there, you know, going door to door with Johan Kristoffersson is pretty cool. And to do it all of a sudden as well. I mean, obviously you'd been in the paddock with him before, but suddenly you're there and door to door. Did you have an opportunity to absorb the fact that you were doing that?
I think later on. I think in that moment, I was just, I wasn't even thinking to anything, you know, I was just thinking about driving. And like I said, I tried to do something that at the end it didn't pay off, but you have to try at the end of the day. So
the second side of this is, of course, it was essentially a one-off chance, right? Like you're filling in for illness. You didn't know if you were going to get another opportunity. Is that how you treated this weekend? Did you treat it sort of as an audition? Did you know? I mean, obviously no one can know if you're going to get another chance in that circumstances. How did you have to mentally tackle that weekend knowing it might be your first and last?
Yeah, like you said, exactly like an audition. You know, you have one shot and you have to just try to make the most of it. You know, it's not easy because, you know, at the end of the day, it's, again, a lot of pressure. You know, it's not simple to actually, you know, you start qualifying and it's like, okay, now it's time. You know, you say that you want to do this because you think you deserve a place. Now you have to prove it, you know. So it's like, ooh, okay. But yeah, it was everything went really well that weekend, so it was okay.
Do you ever doubt yourself in that kind of situation? You know, you rock up and like you say, suddenly it's qualifying time. It all comes down to that, and that might be your only qualifying. Is there any room for doubt? Do you ever have doubts?
Well, I think most of the people sometimes kind of doubt it. You know, there is a point in your career where you're like, am I good enough? Or, you know, there could be moments like that for a lot of people. And of course, it happened to me as well. I mean, you just have not to think about it and just drive, you know, because I learned over the years that the more you overthink and the more you stress and the more you want to perform, and at least for me, the least I go fast. So I just have to go in, drive and enjoy it.
Now, as circumstance would have it, that wasn't going to be your first and last opportunity because you got another, well, you've been racing ever since, in fact, since that first race. But I guess the first of your next set of races happened to be in Italy as well, and it happened to be with Timo Scheider. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with Timo. We've had him on the show before. We had him on the podcast last year. He's certainly a pretty big character. What was that like, the fact not only that you were getting another chance, but that it happened to be with him?
Well, the crazy stuff is that everything was really last minute as well. You know, it's not like after Saudi, I knew exactly that I was going to race in Sardinia. So, you know, we spent so much time, especially the gap between between Saudi and Sardinia was so long. You know, you spend all those months wondering, like, will I drive again? You know, what's going to happen? So it was a very intense few weeks, in fairness. And then, I think a week before Sardinia or something like, I think it was the week before Sardinia, I get a call from James Taylor. So let's say I love when James calls, because normally it's very good stuff. I get a call from James, and he was like, okay, you might be driving Sardinia. And I was like, oh shit, really? And then he told me that it was going to be with Timo. So of course, we have a very good friendship. I mean, since the beginning, when I started working with him in Greenland, we just kind of clicked. You know, we are really similar in a lot of things, and we are good friends. So I was super happy, of course, when they told me that Timo was going to be the other driver.
And how much of an advantage was that then? Because obviously, compared to Saudi, you know, you were dropped in a couple of days before, walking to the tent. Hello, guys. You meet your new driver. Now at least you've got, well, you know the team a bit, and you know the other driver. How much of a difference did that make, especially considering we all know how well that weekend went?
Well, you see, it was nearly the same thing anyway, because, you know, I knew Timo as a person, but I never worked with him. You know, I don't know what he likes in the car, how he likes the car to be. It's all very different, you know, when you know a person, you know, just outside having a meal with, or when you actually have to compete with them. You know, especially in Extreme E, because you have to share everything. You know, you have to share the whole car. You have to share the team. You have to, you know, share your thoughts. And it's different, you know, especially different to what I'm used to. You know, in the car, in rally, it's all about me when I drive. You know, here it's also about someone else, you know. And especially before Sardinia, all the other Extreme E teams actually got a test session, because they had new suspensions and we didn't, you know. So, and I didn't compete. I didn't do anything since Saudi. I haven't touched a race car for months. So I was like landing in again. I was like, oh my God, you know, qualifying. And you just have to get used to the speed again. It, you know, it's not easy when you don't have a lot of seat time to actually be competitive, you know, because it's like if every time you have to remember how to do it again. So for sure, I would love to have more seat time in anything, you know, rallycross or rally or anything, even a test. But yeah, it's not so easy. It's not so easy. Let's say it was a bit easier, but it wasn't, let's say, the perfect conditions anyway.
And of course, just to go back on something you were saying there, these are also pretty wacky cars in a sense. Like, they're not small, nimble rally cars. They're enormous. They're obviously electric as well. They're kind of completely different. Just the adjustment to racing this car, what is it like to race an Odyssey?
I have to say, I thought the step would have been bigger from rally. The minute I sat in the Odyssey back in Greenland, I actually felt very comfortable with the car. So I never had huge, massive problems in adapting my driving style. Of course, the very different thing is that the car, like the, I don't know how to say this in English, actually. the car is so high. And then when you do a corner, you know, it's easy that the car flips over, you know, it goes on two wheels, you know, it's different than a normal rally car or race car. So, and for someone that never drove bogies or that kind of sort of cars, it's let's say tricky to get used to. But yeah, it was always very a nice experience to drive the Odyssey.
Yeah, I mean, we saw you absolutely maximize that. Both rounds of Sardinia in particular, we saw some pretty incredible driving. But that first round, let's just talk about that first round, because it all really clicked together. Massive result. I mean, every Extreme E weekend's kind of a little bit wacky, a little bit chaotic. When was the moment you realized that everything was really starting to work out? There are so many hurdles to go through, of course. You never know for sure. But was there a point in that time in the weekend where you felt like, I think something good might be on the cards here?
Not really. I have to be honest. I was happier, for example, of how the race was going in the second round in Sardinia, but about myself. So I was working on, I couldn't like the car. I there was something that I didn't like when I was driving the car. But when you have no time to change stuff, you know, because like in the race weekend, you have free practice and then you have qualifying straight away. You know, so it's not easy to actually, you know, go in the car and it's like, okay, yeah, this is exactly how I like it. And let's start working from here. You know, especially with the other guys having having had the chance to test the car. And, you know, we had new suspensions in. And I just really didn't like the setting of the suspension so much. So, and with no time, it was like, okay, just let's go. And, you know, every qualifying or everything that is happening, we can change something. But yeah, I mean, it was an incredible weekend at the end of the day. So, that's all that matters.
Yeah, absolutely. Ended up with a podium, really good podium as well, of course, second place, but of course, I'm going to have to ask about the tattoo now, because that was the ultimate result. Like, it wasn't just the trophy you got. The trophy might, you know, who knows? Maybe one day the trophy will get lost, but the tattoo's not going to get lost. When did you realize you were going to have to get that? Because tell us about the bet, first of all, and then the moment you must have realized this is going to happen.
Well, that's Timo's fault. I have no idea how he ended up with this idea. But yeah, we were having a pizza. I can't remember maybe the first day that we were actually in Sardinia, and like he was super pumped and everything. And I think he just had so much adrenaline that he just like said it, you know. And then when he said it, was like, okay, well, yeah, that's fine. We can do it. And I think none of us would have actually guessed that we would actually end up on the podium. So it was more like, yeah, you know, those things that you say, but then you probably don't even mean it. And then I remember when I crossed the line, because Timo started the final, and then I crossed the finish line as a second driver. I remember I crossed the finish line and I was just like waiting to go to the podium area. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, we have to get a tattoo. We are on the podium. And let's say it was a good feeling anyway. You know, it's not like, oh shit, I have to get a tattoo. It was just like have pure happiness. So it was good.
So was it the adrenaline of the pizza that meant you got the adrenaline of, or the tattoo of adrenaline? Is that why?
No. So we spent so much time actually wondering what we could have done as a tattoo. And we just like ended up with some really stupid, crazy ideas. And at the end, I was like, Timo, I will have that on my body forever. You know, I would actually prefer if it was something a bit with a little bit more sense, you know. I don't like to get random tattoos. So every tattoo I have, there's a story behind. So yeah, I was just like thinking. Then I was like, wait a second. That was my idea. And to be honest, I don't know how I ended up in choosing that, you know. I just thought it was a cool idea. And I told Timo, I was like, oh, you know, maybe it's actually not such a great idea. And he just loved it. He was like, oh my God, let's do it. And then I didn't have an appointment to my tattoo guy yet. And Timo 2 days later already had the tattoo and everything. So... Yeah, I think he really loved it.
Yeah, he must have loved it. Can you tell us what were some of the give me the best rejected idea for the tattoo that was out there?
Well, one was Alejandro's face. So that was like, yeah, it's a cool idea, but maybe not.
When you win the championship, you can get that one. Then you have, well, you would have to, in honor of the champion, the guy who runs it.
Maybe a small one.
Maybe a henna tattoo. Maybe a henna tattoo, a temporary tattoo, perhaps. Wow. No, yeah. I can't help but think of the possibilities. That's really thrown me through. I'd like to imagine that one.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and then also we had a question box on our Instagram stories. So just people landed in with some ideas. And I have to say, some of them were also quite crazy.
It's hard to top that one, but you landed on a good one. It is a good one in the end. So it's all good that's worked out nicely. You've had a couple of races now as well to bed yourself in. We'll look ahead to sort of the last round in just a second, but... How have you really felt the progress over the last few rounds? We've talked so much about how important that seat time is. There are only so many rounds in Extreme E, I guess. But how have you felt those last few weeks being able to string together just minutes in the car have benefited you?
Well, you know, in Extreme E, it's hard to, you know, to have a weekend full of just nice things. You know, It's really going up and down again. You know, you could have a great qualifying one, and then qualifying two, you have a contact with someone, you get a penalty, or anything can happen. You see, Extreme E, it's actually one of the discipline in motorsport where literally anything can happen. So, you know, it's hard to predict and to, you know, to try to imagine how your weekend will go. But for sure, like all the seat time and the work that I did with the team has been very helpful. Like I said, the biggest problem is not having anything in between races. You know, that's what I struggle the most. Because like I said before, you spend months, you know, let's say sitting on the sofa with no kind of adrenaline, no speed and no nothing. And then you get in the car and you have to, like I said, everything has to click again. So that's not simple. And that's the biggest thing for me.
So what have you been doing between races then? Because we're right in the middle when we're recording this anyway, between the Copper and Energy X-Prix. What do you do to try and make sure that memory clicks as quickly as possible?
You just try to prepare. That's all you can do. You know, I sadly don't have the budget of doing anything, you know. And in the past few years, I already used a lot of my own money. So I was basically going to work to fund my career. And I got to the point where I decided I can't do that anymore. You know, I'm 25 and sadly it's not possible. I have stuff to pay and it's not possible to, you know, use your money to do this. I did it for so long and it's tough. So yeah, you just prepare, you go to the gym and, you know, you try to look into the data, you look at videos, you look at onboards, and that's all you can do, basically.
Yeah, just scrolling through the Instagram page of Extreme E, I guess, like the rest of us are doing, trying to remember all the good times. It's good content.
Also, yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, chapeau to who's doing it.
Absolutely. Now, looking ahead, we've got the Energy X-Prix coming up in not too long. You're going to have a new teammate, though, at Exide, SKL. Have you had a chance to meet with him or to chat with him yet? And how much about that round is going to be just bedding in that relationship?
Well, so once again in this season, a surprise. You know, I will have three teammates by the end of the season, because yeah. I had Oliver, I had Timo, and I will have Ezekiel. So it's definitely interesting. You know, I never met him before. I literally had a message from him on WhatsApp because we had to talk about some media stuff. But yeah, so it will be definitely a challenge. You know, once again, you have to get used to another person and, but yeah, it's very exciting times and I can't wait for it.
Is it going to be strange, like driving past Timo now when he's, I don't know, doing the championship stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, it was heartbreaking. I mean, even so we knew it, we actually got to know it in the weekend in Chile, I think was. Oh. Friday or something like that before ahead of the race. So was quite tough. Was a tough news, of course. So yeah, at the end of the weekend, actually the whole team and the mechanics gave a present to Timo, and we had like a very emotional speech, and like me and another mechanic were crying and then we were hugging, and it was really, that team is really made of special people, I have to say. I think we really had a great connection between all of us. I mean, I'm not saying that with Ezekiel we will not have it, but, you know, of course it's everything will change. And so, yeah, it will definitely be weird when, you know, when I will just like wave at Timo and it will be with no overall outside the car.
Hopefully the present was like a little statue of Alejandro's face. That would have been pretty fitting.
No. So, you know that Timo crashed in free practice one?
Ah, yes.
Yeah, so it was a part of the car that he broke.
Oh, there you go.
With all the signs of the mechanics that had to fix the car before free practice too, so.
Oh, it's a bit of a backhanded present. I like that. I think that's quite good value. I like that a lot.
No, it was super cool.
So we are approaching the end of the series. There will be a little bit of sadness, I guess. Well, it'll be sad when the series ends anyway, because then we'll be the end of the series, obviously. We'll have nothing to do until the next round, first round of next year. But how will you personally reflect on the year you've had? Because it has been so crazy.
I'd say considering everything, considering the seat time and, you know, considering how hard we have to fight as a team, I think was a pretty good year up to now. I wish we actually ended up on the final every event, of course, and maybe on the podium. But, you know, motorsport is like that, you know. In Saudi, we had the pace to do something nice, but we've been unlucky with the flag, And then also in Sardinia round two, I think we could have been very competitive. But yeah, I nearly rolled the car where the water splash was. And then in quali two, we had a bit of problems at the start. And anyway, we could have had another very nice weekend there. Chile was quite okay up until the end. So it could have been better, that as well. But I'm very happy with the season so far anyway.
Nearly rolled it, but didn't, and created a great highlight. So there's at least a little bit of positive there, at least a little bit.
Yeah, maybe.
For people watching, maybe not for you. Maybe I won't bring that up again.
To me, no. No, especially because I had some split times from my engineer back in the command center. So I knew that we were on the right path, let's say. So then when that happens, obviously you lose 7-8 seconds, something like that. So, you know, you're like, okay, that's it basically, you know. But, you know, we were trying to push and that was just unfortunate, really. So it is what it is. And the video looked cool, so.
Yeah, more Instagram content. And look, finally, we're approaching the end of the season. I mean, this has been such an unpredictable season. Can you predict what next year is going to look like for you, or what you want it to look like?
Well, what I want to look like, I know it very clearly. But what's going to happen, I have no idea at all. So we will have to see. For sure, I'd love to have a full season where you start and finish with the same teammates, everything always the same, and you know, a lot of preparation, a lot of work, and yeah, that would be great. But you know, whatever happens, happens. So I just hope to be part of the series again, and that's it.
Never know. Maybe a few more tattoos in your future. I don't know. Anything
can happen. I told you, extremely is unpredictable.
Tamara, it's been great to have you on the podcast. Great to catch up, and all the best for the final round of the season.
Thank you very much.
I really enjoyed catching up with Tamara and hearing a little bit more about her story. Racers aren't always so candid about the mental pressure of competition, so I thought it was fascinating to listen to her talk about the weight of her own expectations and how she uses it to drive her performance. And how about that idea for an Alejandro tattoo? The concept's out there now, so I'm certainly hoping someone runs with it. Maybe the winner of the next X-Prix. Thanks very much for the chat, Tamara, and thanks to Exide Energy Racing for arranging it. If you enjoyed that interview, why not leave Off Track a rating and a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts? And you can subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts to make sure you never miss an episode. Tamara will be back in action for Exide Energy Racing at the next and final round of the championship, which is the Energy X-Prix in Punta del Este in Uruguay on 26 and 27 November. You can keep up to speed with the series on social media and on the Extreme E website. But we'll be back for another chat with another big name from the world of Extreme E in just a couple of weeks. Until then, my name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you next time.